You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to a new episode of Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Today's Locked On Rockets is brought to you courtesy of SeatGeek. Download their mobile app for the easiest way to buy tickets, and the promo code LORockets will get you a $20 rebate on your first purchase. So as we chat on this Wednesday evening, it's an off day for the Rockets, but it's not an off day without any news. They practice today getting ready for the showdown with the Thunder tomorrow night at Toyota Center, nationally televised game on TNT. The good news, Pat Beverly did practice. Mike D'Antoni says he is expecting him to play. I always said I'd be shocked if Beverly didn't play against Russell Westbrook. That's one of those games that he highlights on his calendar every year. But it does seem like Beverly's minor wrist injury, after giving him one extra day off against the Wizards, is good to go. Thankfully, the Rockets did not lose either of the games without Pat Beverly, because clearly you could see he was missed, but fortunately did not cost the Rockets a game in the standings. Also, Mike D'Antoni won Coach of the Month for the Western Conference. It's a big award for the Rockets because it's the first time they've had the Player of the Month, that's James Harden, and Coach of the Month simultaneously since November 1993. Back then, of course, it was Hakeem Olajuwon and Rudy Tomjanovich, and as I'm sure you remember if you're a longtime Houston sports fan, that was a pretty special year in Houston, ended with the Rockets' first ever NBA title. Hopefully we can say the same thing in a few months about this, but for now, just enjoy it. It speaks to how special the month of December was for this team. The Rockets were, of course, 15-2, and the NBA, they love to spread out those awards. The entire point of why the NBA does these types of programs, it's basically to give as many teams around the league credit as they can. It's basically a PR-generated thing so that those teams can go out and say that their players, their coaches, whoever it may be, are getting honored for the work they do. And so it's really freaking hard to have the same team win both of the marquee awards, the player and the coach of the month. And as I said, the Rockets have been a pretty upper echelon franchise for a while, and they haven't done it in basically 23 years. So yeah, it shows you just how rare this past month has been for the Rockets, and it's not just those of us in Houston that are enjoying it. The Rockets are getting their due nationally as well. Now, on that subject, with the Thunder coming in on Thursday evening to Toyota Center, the game on TNT, as I just got done telling you guys, we know it's going to be billed as a huge showdown between James Harden and Russell Westbrook. Those are the one and two on seemingly everyone's MVP list these days, but as I promised you guys, I have a column that's now up at sports790.com. That's the website of Sports Talk 790, the flagship radio station of the Houston Rockets. And in that, I basically made my case for why it's not a true showdown. Yes, it's a big game. It's going to be fun. It always is when you get Harden and Westbrook together, and then you put Pat Beverly in the mix as well. It's always fun. There are so many storylines there. But no matter what happens tomorrow night, no matter if James plays better, if Russell plays better, or if it's a draw, James Harden is still the MVP no matter what. Because at the end of the day, it's one game out of 82. Regardless of what the numbers are, both are still going to be having phenomenal individual seasons, and it's really close. If you look at my column, I broke it down by the stats. Basically, Russell has slightly better counting stats, James has slightly better efficiency, but on the whole, you can pick any metric you want. It's really freaking close. And it's a pretty simple concept. As I said on this show before, if it's close, the tiebreaker over the history of the NBA and their awards voting tends to go to team success. And right now, the Rockets are on pace to have a 62-20 season, be over 40 games, over 500, to be in the top three of a very strong Western Conference, at least the top of it. The Thunder, they're 21-14. They're on pace to win basically 49 games. And right now, they're the seventh seed in the Western Conference. To put it simply, the Thunder are a pretty good playoff team. The Rockets are an elite team. And in the past, not just 2 years ago, there are plenty of examples throughout NBA history that when this happens, the tiebreaker tends to send it to the guy who's playing a bigger role within his team's success and has elevated his team to the level of a title contender. One of the examples that I mentioned that stood out most to me, I go back to 2005-2006, 11 years ago, and that was another Mike D'Antoni team in Phoenix when Steve Nash was the conductor. And I do think Harden now is better than Nash was then, but it's much the same role. Basically the orchestrator, the quarterback of the best offense in the league. And Nash back then had phenomenal individual numbers. The team success was off the charts. It was a revolutionary offense. But Kobe Bryant, just as Russell Westbrook is the bulldog, the lead alpha, that's what Kobe Bryant was then. He averaged over 35 points a game, and really, you might could say that's even similar to 40 points a game now because teams did not score as much back then. Kobe averaged 35 a game. He had the 81-point game at one point. He was the ultimate alpha, just as people love and respect in Russell Westbrook right now. But at the end of the day, even though Nash probably was not as feared as Kobe, Nash won the award because his contributions were more vital within the framework of an NBA title contender. And so that's what I'm trying to lay out as a positive case for why, even though, yes, they're 1 and 2, and so in a sense it's a showdown anytime number one faces number two, the gap between 1 and 2 is pretty big. So no matter what happens tomorrow night, James Harden, as long as the Rockets stay in the top three and stay on course for a 60-plus win season, if this mark continues and all evidence that we see so far indicates the Rockets are legit, there's nothing Russell Westbrook can do tomorrow night to substantially change the narrative. This is James Harden's award to lose, and whether he loses or not, it's going to be determined by the team's performance over the remaining 45 games or so in this season, not any one particular game or one head-to-head moment. It's bigger than that, and based on nearly half a season's worth of evidence, James Harden is the clear front-runner for MVP. That's why I wrote the column, and that's what I hope folks take out of it, because we want to start putting that narrative out there that it's not really a race. It's a horse race because, well, the media always likes a horse race. It's what gets them clicks. We saw a lot of that in the presidential election coverage, you know, but at the end of the day, this is a much bigger gap than the way it's being portrayed, and so we need to start shifting the narrative towards that. About the only negative I've heard in response is a few cynical people saying, well, I think you're right, but the voters may not see it that way, that the voters have some sort of anti-Houston, anti-Harden, or pro-Westbrook bias. My response to that would be this. Guys, confidence sells. Imagine going into a job interview and saying, well, I think it'd be good for this job, but I'm probably not going to get it anyway because the system's rigged against me and you guys don't know what you're doing, but I think I should probably get it anyway. How do you think that hiring people would respond to that? That's essentially what you're doing if you accuse the system of being corrupt and biased before the vote even takes place. For starters, as I point out in the column, it's not similar to 2 years ago. I know a lot of people feel burned by Harden not getting it 2 years ago. I thought he deserved it. But back then, Stephen Curry was the one on the better team, on the elite team. Harden, the challenger, was on a, well, I wouldn't say it was the same as Oklahoma City. Now the Rockets won 56 games, so a little bit better, but they clearly were not at the level of the Warriors. Curry had team on his side. So I don't think it's fair to take that and accuse some kind of institutional bias on behalf of NBA media against the Rockets or against James Harden. Secondly, we're at the point now, voting is starting to get serious. Over the next 2-3 months, people are going to be making their decisions, and if you want people to side with you, if you want to change minds, you don't typically do that by telling them, well, you're just an idiot or you're corrupt. And when you say that you think there's some kind of institutional bias against you or against your team, that's what it sounds like. So I think we all need to make sure that we look at this from a standpoint of just be nice, be respectful, just lay out your points as I try to do in that column, and assume the best of people. Because the folks that vote on these awards, the way it works, each team gets to handpick a few media members. It's selected by each team's media, PR people, and they pick writers, TV people, radio, that cover the team on a daily basis. And if you make that threshold, there's usually 125 to 150 overall voters, it's a pretty high bar. These are successful people. You're not going to change the minds of successful people by basically calling them out before the vote even takes place and saying, well, you're just ridiculous, you're wrong. If you do that, you're going to make them harden in their original position. What you want to do is just essentially be nice, courteous, respectful, and make your argument as best you can. Just go out, state your points, and assume that they're willing to change their minds. Even if they say something positive about Russell Westbrook, don't just roll your eyes and write them off. Because if you do that, then again, you're just going to get them to kind of harden on their original position. You need to assume the best of people, because if you don't, they're not going to assume the best of you. They're going to assume that you're just some biased fan and they're going to tune you out. If Harden were to get screwed, there's plenty of time to talk about that in May, June, the entire offseason. There's plenty of time to hold those folks accountable. If Harden leads the Rockets to a 60-plus win year and somehow he doesn't win the MVP award, then I will be the one leading the charge for how unfair it was. But for right now, when all sorts of historical precedent is on your side, when everyone seems to be singing the praises of James Harden, and if you look around, he's on the top of pretty much every MVP list that I'm seeing. He's winning player of the month. There are so many positive accolades for this team. I don't know what it gets you to be cynical. At this point, just make your case as strongly as you can, but be respectful, because if you want people that are on the fence to consider going your way, you're not going to get them to side with you if you basically accuse them of having some sort of systemic bias. Because essentially what you're doing when you say that is you're basically saying that they're incapable of doing their job, that they're not capable of being an objective observer and interpreting the results as we see them from a fairness perspective. And that's just not it. It's not the right way to go. It's a scorched earth philosophy. And while I have not seen too many people on Rockets Twitter or in the Rockets social media community doing that, I've seen a few. And so that's what I would be very cautious about. I know where you guys are coming from. If you follow me on Twitter, you've seen me sarcastically use the hashtag Houston Sports before. I get the cynicism, but now is not the time for it. If James Harden doesn't get his due after the season, if Mike D'Antoni doesn't, if these things continue and it still doesn't work out, then yeah, you'll have a point. For right now, let's just be as confident as we can, because in anything, people like confidence. People respect it. If you put that narrative out there that James Harden should be the leader and you make clear cases for why he is ahead of Russell Westbrook or anyone else, then I think there's a good shot that people are going to take you seriously and listen. Because at the end of the day, not that many media members are significantly biased. Most of them try very hard. They take these awards very seriously. And if you show them respect, then I think they're going to consider what you have to say. So that's what I'm trying to do. I think most Rockets fans are as well. Just wanted to go on that brief rant for those of you that are being, in my opinion, a little bit overly cynical. I think if the vote were held today, James Harden would be the MVP, and let's just hope it remains that way over the next 45 games. Because if the Rockets continue the success they're on now, I think there's a very good chance that it does. Now, to talk about this topic a little more, the back half of this show, I'm going to play you some audio from Mark Spears of ESPN. Mark joined David Locke, the host of Locked On NBA. That's the national show for this Locked On podcast, earlier today. He did a full breakdown of basically the MVP race, where the Rockets are in the standings, what he expects from them in the playoffs. Thought it had some pretty interesting nuggets, so I am going to play that in just a few moments. Kind of feeds into what we've just been talking about from the MVP race in the national perspective. But for now, I do want to pause and acknowledge our wonderful sponsors over at SeatGeek. Because buying tickets online for big-time sporting events, just like the Rockets in Oklahoma City tomorrow night, James Harden and Russell Westbrook, it's been a confusing process for quite a while. It's hard to get the best deal for the right game, and many of the older ticket sites really don't want to change that because the confusion works to their advantage. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans like us to buy and sell tickets. Everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for you, the sports fan. They do the price comparisons for you, they search multiple ticket sites, and they ensure that you get the best possible deal. They also want to help you get the most bang for your buck, and they do that by grading every ticket on the site. Each ticket is graded from 1 to 100, with 100 being the best deal, so you can very easily find any underpriced seats and grab the best deals for your budget. Now, to get your $20 rebate on tickets, here's the important part. Download the SeatGeek app, go to the Settings tab, and click Add a Promo Code, then enter the promo code LORockets. SeatGeek will then send you $20 in the mail after you've made your first ticket purchase. So remember, download that SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LORockets today. So jumping back into the show, I don't want to delay any longer. We've had a lot of Harden MVP talk already. You guys know where I stand on Harden relative to Russell Westbrook. Rockets are simply the better team. While both are having phenomenal years, Harden is doing it within the framework of a title contender, and that should give him the benefit of the doubt in this race. But it doesn't matter what I think. I'm not a voter for the award. Someone who often is Mark Spears, veteran NBA reporter. He's been with the Vertical for a long time. He recently moved over to ESPN, where he works with the Undefeated. That's one of their new ventures. But yeah, Mark Spears of ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter, as I'm sure most of you do. He was on Locked On NBA earlier today with David Locke, and he had some very interesting things to say about James Harden, the MVP race, and the Rockets as a whole. So let's go ahead and roll that audio.
These explosion, nightly explosions by Westbrook and Harden, they blow you away? Do you think there's something going on in the game that allows this to happen differently, or are these just two of the most remarkable individual seasons in the history of the game?
Probably all of the above. I mean, they're a product of their environment. You know, D'Antoni was brilliant in basically just giving the ball to James Harden and letting him be the point guard in that offense. You know, he's getting a lot of easy assists and some easy dump offs because the defense is so catered to hoping to stop a fantastic offensive player. So I know James Harden has to love playing in this. As far as Oklahoma City is concerned, I like what Westbrook is doing, but I just wonder if he can last. It's just a lot that he's doing, man. I certainly respect the Oscar Robertson numbers, but it's got to be physically draining to basically carry the load of this Oklahoma City team on his shoulders. Him is just okay. Losing Kevin Durant was devastating to the franchise. So, you know, Westbrook has been awesome. I mean, for them to be hundreds says a lot about how special he is. But, you know, Houston right now is like a third seed team. I don't see Oklahoma City other than making playoffs and quickly. So, it'll be interesting when the MVP balloting comes around because this is, you know, while it might have been unanimous with Curry, when the MVP ballots come around this time, Durant, Harden, Westbrook, James, DeRozan, Anthony Davis, maybe I'm missing somebody, but I can see a very, very crowded field about as hard as it is for us to vote for MVP as ever. If I had to vote right now, it'd be very, very tough. Perhaps I would lean on Harden because of their record, but with what Westbrook has been doing, it'd be hard to deny that as well.
Let's go back to Houston for a second. Do you buy that? Do you buy Houston as legit, and do you think they can be at any threat at all to the Warriors?
No, and you got to include, are they a threat to San Antonio too? Because if they end up with the third seed, they'd probably end up playing San Antonio in the second round. I just think ultimately when you play Westbrook or Harden in the playoffs. And you got to play them seven times at most. It's a lot of time to like adapt and prepare. And when you're seeing the same pitch over and over and over again, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, I think there's some defense that you get where you force probably everybody else to beat you, or you let James Harden or Westbrook score 80 and they lose, you know, against the great teams. So I do see Houston getting to the second round, but I'd be stunned if they got back to the – I mean, not get back, but, yeah. Did they get – were they in the West?
2 years ago.
Oh, it was the second round. I'd be shocked if they got past the second round.
That's Mark Spears of ESPN. I know a lot of you guys aren't going to agree with him about the Rockets, but first things first, let's give him credit for being fair. Because what drives me crazy, and I haven't seen it so much in the national media, I've just seen it on a few fan accounts, is when people discount the Rockets' record if they say that despite what the metrics show, they're not really a threat to the Spurs, let alone the Warriors, and then simultaneously try to deny the praise to James Harden as the MVP and Mike D'Antoni as a coach of the year. Because really, those wins, that record, that point differential, it's coming from somewhere. Now, I think It's a lot of places Harden and D'Antoni deserve their due individually, but I also think the Rockets as a team, led by those guys, are doing some things that could pose problems to the Spurs and Warriors in the playoffs. But if your contention is that despite the record, the Rockets are not quite to the Spurs level, then clearly someone is responsible for them playing so far above their collective talent level. And quite obviously, it's the system of Mike D'Antoni, and it's James Harden's individual brilliance. So if you're going to state these concerns about the Rockets as a team, then at least you have to be willing to give respect on an individual level to Harden and D'Antoni, and that's what Mark does by saying that basically Harden would be his MVP vote right now based on the record. Now, I know he cautioned it and pointed out how great of a season that Westbrook is having as well, but that's what national writers are going to do. These guys at national level, they want to be in with every marquee player. They don't want to be seen as disrespecting anyone else. So, of course, Russell Westbrook is having a phenomenal year, and I don't think you're going to see any national writers come out and say that, well, this isn't even close, because they want to make it seem like a hard decision because they like all these guys, and Russell is having a great individual year. It's just the case for Harden. While the margin isn't huge, it's a clear margin. It's not a huge margin. It's a small margin, but it's one that's very evident in the record. And unless that changes, it's going to be there. So give credit to Mark. Even if he doesn't believe in the Rockets as a team, he's willing to give James Harden respect for the record that these Rockets have, be it legitimate in his eyes or not. And so hopefully that gets Harden the MVP vote for Mark. And hopefully Mike D'Antoni gets his Coach of the Year vote as well. Now, as far as Mark's remarks about the team, here are the issues I have with it. He alleges that basically the Rockets, in a way, are a one-trick pony, and he kind of lumps them in with Oklahoma City. Now, the records are different, but I digress. I've talked about that enough on this show. He kind of says that the Rockets are a one-trick pony, that it's so rare what Harden and Westbrook are doing, but that when you get into a playoff setting, especially against a team like the Spurs, the Warriors, that the repetition of seeing these guys more frequently is something that does not occur in the regular season. Now, he might be right, but not for the reasons that he states. And when I say he's right, he could be right about the Rockets as a team. I don't think he's right about Harden individually at all. Because when you look at the track record for James Harden and the Rockets this year, some of their best moments have come against teams that have had time to scout them or against teams that have played them before. The big game at Golden State, that was a Thursday night in early December when they won that game. Golden State, that was a late Thursday game. They hadn't played since Monday. They had over 72 hours off in which they did nothing but focus on the Rockets and scout them. And it still didn't work. The Rockets still put up 130 points, although it took them a couple of overtimes to get there. I know Dallas's record isn't great, but Rick Carlisle is probably the best defensive tactician of this era. He is a wizard on that end of the floor. The Rockets are 4-0 against the Mavericks, and actually their offensive efficiency seemed to pick up with each game they played against Dallas. So, and that was even as Dallas got healthier. So if there were something to the Rockets that's just their uniqueness, and that seeing them more often or having time to scout, which you would in the playoffs, would make it easier to stop them, I think you would see it in settings like that. We could even point to Phoenix a week ago. The Rockets were a little sluggish in Phoenix last week of December, and they picked up in the second half, and then when they came back to Houston a couple of days later, Rockets put up over 130. That's the same team they played just a few days ago and were in a tight battle with for almost three quarters. If the Rockets, if there was something to them that it's just the uniqueness and that teams would get used to it, then I think the more that teams play the Rockets, especially in a short time frame, just like the playoffs, you would see them start to have more success. Or if a team has a lot of days off before playing the Rockets, as the Warriors did, maybe they would have more success because they could scout exclusively on the Rockets rather than be distracted on whatever other teams are on their schedule. The results are not showing that. In fact, what we've heard from NBA coaches throughout the year, most recently I talked to Doc Rivers about this, the coach of the Clippers, last Friday. He says the Rockets offense, it's actually easy to understand. It's difficult to stop. The Rockets are not out there reinventing the wheel. The concepts that they're using in the offensive end of the floor, it's just a lethal diet of pick and rolls. There are two or three variations. They have two or three big men that run the floor and are willing to basically be rim rockers, just the roll men with James Harden on the pick and roll. And then you have these elite shooters. The difference is that the Rockets, A, have the talent to execute that system. They have so many shooters that it works so well. And B, they have a relentless drive to bludgeon teams to death with what works. A lot of times in the NBA, teams kind of talk themselves into diversity. They want to do all these different things. Mike D'Antoni has said before, James Harden is a pick and roll wizard, so why do anything else? That's what the Rockets do. It's a very simple system. So I don't buy that, well, they're doing something crazy unique, and if once it gets to the playoffs, they're going to scout it. Well, no, what the Rockets are doing now is not that difficult to scout. It's difficult to stop based on the personnel they have and their willingness to continue to do the same thing. Now, where I do think the Rockets could run into trouble, this is a little bit speculative. First and foremost, I do think there is a psychological impact. That's something that Craig Ackerman, the team's play broadcaster, has said before, to how the Rockets kill teams with a barrage of threes, how they're able to put up 10, 12 points in seemingly a minute, 90 seconds. And if you play the Rockets over seven games, maybe that effect gets mitigated some. Maybe teams would get desensitized to it in the playoffs. But it's not that they would get any better at defending the Rockets. It's on the other end of the floor. It's that maybe they would get more used to those runs, and so it wouldn't basically take the opponent off their game to the same extent it does in the regular season when they're not used to playing a team with that kind of capability. In other words, maybe the other team's offense isn't likely to get thrown off their game the way they are in a regular season when the Rockets stand out more. The other element that I worry about with the Rockets in the playoffs, especially against the Spurs or the Warriors, it's not the offense, it's the defensive end of the floor. One thing that's clear about the Rockets so far this year, they are very well coached on the defensive end of the basketball court. They know how to mitigate their weaknesses really well. We know Ryan Anderson doesn't move that well laterally. We know they don't have a true rim protector. We know now, without Clint Capella, they have two guys inside, two centers in Montrezl Harrell and Nene, neither one rebounds that well. But they do so many things as a team to limit the impact of those weaknesses. You're seeing guards, Pat Beverly, James Harden, rebound better than they ever have. Sam Decker at the four spot is having a huge role there. You're seeing a very team approach utilized by Jeff Bezdelic. He's done a wonderful job in Houston. And that's how the Rockets, despite some of their individual weaknesses, are having success basically at the level of anyone in the league, just short of Golden State. But besides Golden State, even Cleveland and San Antonio, their results are not far ahead of the Rockets at this point in the year. Once you get to the playoffs, however, it might be a little easier for opposing teams who get a feel for the Rockets, who play them with repetition, to zero in on those weak spots and find a way to isolate those weaknesses, to get Ryan Anderson one-on-one, to find a way to crash the glass and take advantage of the centers that can't rebound, or maybe the rim protection issues that even with Clint Capella still exist to a degree. I could see that happening because we know what the Rockets' limitations are defensively. If the Rockets aren't a championship contender this year, it's for the same reason we knew going into the year, which is that while they're elite offensively, they still probably need one more addition defensively. Now, thus far, they've done a hell of a job mitigating it. But if it catches up with them, I think that's where it happens. The offensive end of the floor, what the Rockets are doing with James Harden, I don't think it's due to basically not enough scouting time or rarity or any other excuse you can come up with. The Rockets just have great offensive personnel. They have a great system, and they have great team play. They're not going to go away from what works. They're not going to bicker. They're just going to bludgeon teams to death with a system that they know produces great results, and they have the talent to execute that system with tons of shooters, tons of bigs that are capable of rolling to the bucket at will. And so I don't think that's going to change as it gets to the playoffs. So in that sense, I think Mark is wrong. I don't think that the Rockets are some sort of mirage on the offensive end of the floor when it comes to their results with James Harden. I think that's likely to be consistent. I think where you might see some problems is on the other end. But by and large, he could be right, but not for the reasons that he said. That's what I would just dispute. But let's give credit to Mark. Even if I disagree, I will say that he was fair in this process, and that's all you can ask. Because again, where you get into an issue of bias against Houston is if you have Mark saying something like he doesn't buy into the Rockets as a team and not giving James Harden his due as an MVP. If you believe what he says, I don't think the results bear it out, but if you believe it, then it's clearly a result of James Harden doing phenomenal work in this regular season. And when you combine that with the record, at least in contrast to Russell Westbrook and the Oklahoma City Thunder, you have to say that James Harden is your MVP at this point in the season. So even if I disagree a little bit with Mark's assessment of the Rockets, we can agree with his assessment of the MVP race. I think that's a good place to wrap up this show. Because really, it's Wednesday. It's an off day for the Rockets. There's not a ton going on the floor other than the report, of course, that Pat Beverly's back in practice, likely to play tomorrow night against the Thunder, and, of course, D'Antoni getting his Coach of the Month award. It's an off day, so I thought this was a good time to go into the MVP race a little bit deeper, especially with Russell Westbrook and the Thunder coming to Toyota Center tomorrow night. So I think this was a good show to kind of break down why, if you didn't know it already, James Harden, he's the front runner for MVP, regardless of what happens on that floor tomorrow night. But when tomorrow gets here and the Thunder roll into Toyota Center, we'll get back to, well, the basketball. It's not about James Harden and Russell Westbrook. It's about the Rockets on the floor against the Thunder. They're 1-1 against the Thunder this year. Really should be 2-0. It's amazing they lost that game in November to Oklahoma City, but that was without Pat Beverly. They're 1-0 with Pat Beverly against the Thunder, and hopefully they'll be 2-0 tomorrow night. If you stay tuned to me and this show at Locked On Rockets, we'll have it all covered for you as the Rockets take on they're taking on the Thunder at Toyota Center on Thursday night, a nationally televised game on TNT. As always, thanks to all of you for listening. Also, thanks to our special sponsors at SeatGeek. They're the ones responsible for bringing you today's episode. Download the mobile app for the easiest way to buy tickets, and the promo code LORockets gets you a $20 rebate on your first purchase at SeatGeek. Again, I'm Ben Dubose. Follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. This is Locked On Rockets. Follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. And always email the show as well at LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. If you've got questions or suggestions for me or anything you want to know about this basketball team, we want to be your daily resource for insight into the Houston Rockets. So on that note, tune back in tomorrow as the Rockets take on the Thunder. We'll be waiting for you. Have a good night.